Masechet Shabbat in memory of Marcel and Jack Shasho. Ruach Adonai Tanichim Began Eden. Amen.
Daf Kuf Chaf He. Today's daf has been dedicated by Mr. Saul Asa in honor of the rabbi, Tzkilim Mitzvot. Today's daf is being studied by Ilu Nishmat Acham Baruch Rafael Ben Miriam and Avraham Ben Esther. Ruach Hashem Tanichem Began Eden. Amen. We are beginning today on Kuf Chav Dalet Amud Bet, and we are five lines from the bottom, starting with the words Amar of Yehuda Amar Shemuel Megufat Habit Shenichteta. I'm going to read the Bach's amendment here. He says, "Megufat habit shenichteta hi ushvareha mutav." We're talking about a case where there's a barrel, an earthenware barrel that has a cover to it. The barrel broke now into smaller shards. So you have the broken barrel and you have the cover, which is still intact. That's the way that she learns the sugya here. So it says, both the cover and the shards of the broken barrel, mutar letaltel b'Shabbat. It is permissible to move them on Shabbat. Why? Well, the cover obviously is still functional as a cover, and even the broken pieces of the barrel can be used as a keli somewhere else to cover something else. So therefore, since they still have a function and a use for it, they do not lose their status of mukseh. That she says, "Nitalin b'Shabbat dehazu lekisui mana." They are worthy to cover a smaller vessel. Comes the Gemara and supports this with a braita. Tanya na mehache. We have a braita to support what we just said. Megufa. Again, that would be the cover of the havit of the barrel. Shenichteta, that the barrel broke. He, the cover, ushvareha, and the broken pieces of the barrel, mutar letaltela b'Shabbat. So the Braita clearly supports what we just said. However, velo yispot mimena shever lechasot ba etakeli. However, the Mishnah, the Braita says one should not be the spot. As she said, that it means to fix. Meaning if you have a small little chard, and there's, let's say, protrusions coming out of it, it's not perfect, and therefore it's really not worthy yet to cover the keli. So you can't smoothen it out on Shabbat to make it usable. Why? Because that would be considered the melachav makeh bepatish, where you're adding final touches, where you're making this shard now usable. So if it breaks in a way where it's usable off the bat, so of course you'd be able to use it because it still has a function. But if it needs tikkun, if it needs smoothing out from the protrusions that are coming out of these pieces over here, so the Mishnah, the Braita says, "Velo yispot." Rashi's lashon is, and I read it, "Lo yispot lo yitaken lehasir blitotav." You should not fix it to take out its protrusions, the oksav. Some of the parts are pointy, so you want to smoothen them out. B'Shabbat, da'avid keli, because now you're making a keli out of it. Ve'ave makeh bepatish. So that would be considered makeh bepatish. The last part of the braita says, ve'im zarka be'ashpa asur. If you took these pieces and you threw them in the garbage, whatever you did it, so that already shows your intention is not to use them, and therefore they become mukseh. Rashi's lashon is, ve'im zarak megufa zu le'ashpa batla betorat keli. Once you throw it into the garbage, so already it takes it out of its status of a keli. Now, if you want to take it out, you can't anymore, because it becomes mukseh. So the Gemara asks on that point, matkif la rav papa, ela me'ata, according to that logic, Zarik le gelime, hachaname de asur. Are you going to tell me if a person has a gelima, let's say he has a shirt or he has a robe, The robe is not mukseh. If you're going to tell me, let's say he goes and throws the robe in the garbage, so now when you tell me the robe becomes mukseh, if it's a keli, it's a keli. So what's the difference if he throws it in the garbage? Could you, but just by throwing it in the garbage, you take it out of its status of a keli? So same thing over here. These two pieces over here, they were worthy to cover something. So why should throwing it in the ashpa change its status? So the Gemara says, El amar papa, im zarka mibe'od yom le'ashpa asura. Exactly. Meaning we're not talking when you threw it in the ashpa on Shabbat. You're right. On Shabbat, you can't change its status. We're talking with Erev Shabbat. Already you took this little shard and you threw it away. So that already showed in your mind that what? You don't have intention to use it as a keli. Now, granted, if you would throw a gilima in the ashpan Erev Shabbat, it would still retain its status as a gilima. Why? Because that is a keli. That is a keli on its own. It doesn't need any extra kavana to make it a keli. Here, this is a shard. Normally shards, let's say, you know, are not necessarily used for other things. So therefore, such an item by throwing it away before Shabbat, that shows already in your mind, you're not willing, you're not interested in using this item. And therefore it takes the status of a keli off of it. So again, the deen would be, if you threw the piece of Haris in the Ashpa before Shabbat, already you cannot change your mind now. Which means once Shabbat comes, you can't take it out of the Ashpa and say, no, I want to use it. Already you decided that it's out of your mind, it's not a keli for you, and therefore it'll be a deen of Mukseh. Comes Gemara and says, Amar bar hameduri Amar Shemuel, Kromiyot shel mahatzelet mutal letaltelam b'Shabbat. Now she says you have an old mat. The mats in the olden days were made of, let's say, the leaves of the palm, or the wood of the palm. So they would tie them together and make a mat. What were the mats used for? Let's say to cover the ground, to keep the dust down. So now, let's say it came apart. So now you have pieces of that mat. That's called krumiyot shel mahatzelet. You have the pieces of wood of a mahatzelet that came apart. So the Gemara said it is permissible to move those pieces of wood on Shabbat. What's the reason? My ta'ama, amarava bara meduri asbirali. So he said that bara meduri explained it to me. Mahatzelet gufa, the actual mat itself, lemay hazya, what is its purpose? Lechesuye be afra, in order to cover afar, to cover dirt. As she says, either to cover the dirt on the floor to keep it from rising up, or they used to have designated dirt in a certain spot in the house in order to use the dirt to cover tsoah, to cover excrement. So they didn't want the dirt to be exposed. So they have a mat that would cover the dirt. In any event, obviously the mahatzelet itself has a function. So the Gemara says, Hanenameh, these pieces that came off of the mahatzelet, the krumiyot, nameh chazyan, they also have a function, lechesuye beutinofet. You can cover tinofet, which would mean something that is dirty, that is on the ground, a small amount of it. You can use these little pieces that broke off also to cover it up, and therefore there is no problem. Now, it comes out, according to this, actually the krumiyot have the same exact function that the mahaselet did. Tosfot says you really didn't need that, because if we hold like the opinion that says so long as it has any function, it's okay. So therefore, you don't have to go to the extent to say that it has to be serving the same function, just like the mahatzelet covers to the dirt, so to this can. So Tosfot Lashon is, he just says, Lerav hademilta beferesh achi. And the Gemara just is explaining it, even according to the other opinions. Afalgab delo ba'e me'en melacha rishona. Even though we hold that you don't need the actual same melacha rishona, kedamar of Nachman, like we learned above. Comes the Gemara and continues. Amar vizera, amar rav. Shire pruzmiyot. What is shire pruzmiyot? That is talitot. Person has a talit, let's say, a garment, and let's say it now wore out and it's very small now. So the Gemara says, if it's a worn out talit that you have the remnants, we'll call it asur l'taltelan b'shabbat. It becomes mukseh. The question is, why should it become mukseh? Even the smallest the garment should have some type of function. So the Gemara says, Amar Abaye b'matlaniyot she'en ba'em gimal al gimal. We're talking about where the patches of this talit are so small that they don't even have the minimum size of 3 itzba'ot by 3 itzba'ot. Which means they have no use even for a poor person. Which means a poor person would use something that is at least 3 by 3 itzba'ot. That's like the size of a patch. He would use it, let's say, patch his garment. But less than 3 by 3, even to a poor man and certainly a rich man, there is no value to such a thing. They don't use it. And therefore, if you have the remnant of a talet that is less than 3 by 3 itzba'ot, it becomes mukseh. And now the Gemara begins a new subject regarding the ovens. The Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanan, we have a braita. Shivre Tanur Yashan. You have the broken pieces of an old oven. What does an old oven mean? That she says that the ovens were made out of henes, they were made out of clay, and after they would fire it up once, already the clay would harden. So that's what it means when it says Tanur Yashan, that it was heated up once where the clay became hardened, and now these pieces that break, let's say, have a value to them. I mean, they can be used for a melacha, maybe, because now it's talking about it's hardened clay. Now let's see the din. Tanur Rabbanan Shivre Tanur Yashan Harein Kechol HaKelim HaNitalin BeHatzer. They are like all other vessels that broke, that are permissible to move in the Hatzer, the Vrede Bimir. If you remember in yesterday's daf, we actually had a three-way mahloket. If you have a broken piece of pottery, where exactly is it not mukseh? One opinion said only in the Hatzer. Another opinion said even in the Karmelit. And the other opinion said anywhere. I mean, once it's viable in the Hatzer, it's viable anywhere. So again, here it's saying that the broken pieces of a tanur, since the shards still have a function to them, so they can be moved, they're not mukseh in the Hatzer. Again, Tosfot says, lav davka behatzer, because according to the opinions that we mentioned above, Rav Nachman and Rava, on the last daf, they even allow you to either move it in a Karmelit or even in a Reshut Arabim. So this word Chatzer, according to Tosfot, is Lav Dafka, is not precise. It could even mean in other places. The point is, it is not Mukseh. Now, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, En Nitalin. He says, no, these broken pieces of the oven are not movable, meaning they are mukseh. The Gemara is going to explain the mahloket of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. He'id Rabbi Yoseh Mishum Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. We have a testimony from Rabbi Yoseh in the name of Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. Al Shivre Tanur Yashan. On the broken pieces of an old oven, Shenitalin b'Shabbat. So he agrees that what? They are not mukseh on Shabbat. Ve'al kisuyav. Now regarding the cover of these ovens, she'eno tzarich bet yad. That the cover is not mukseh, even if it does not have a handle. And we'll see that in a moment. Now let's go back to understand the machloket between the Rabbi Meir and the Rabbi Yehuda. Why one rabbi says to Rabbi Meir that the broken pieces of the oven are not mukseh, when the Biyuda says they are. What's the rationale of the machloket? So the Gemara says, "Bimai kamipalge." What is the root of the argument? Amar Abaye. Abaye says, "Beosin me'en melacha, ve'en osin me'en melachtan." We're talking about the machloket that we're familiar with from the last Mishnah.
the shards of the tanur that broke, they have a function, but they don't serve the original function. The original function of a tanur is what? To bake things in. These little shards now, you really don't bake in those little shards, but you can use it, let's say, to cover something. So that's going to be subject to the machloket that we had in our last Mishnah. That when you have a keli that breaks, and now the broken pieces take on a new usage, so Rabbi Meir will tell you, that's okay. So long as they have still functionality to them, they're not mukseh. Which means all you need is me'ain melacha. You just need to have a usage, but not me'ain melachtan, but not its usage. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda is going to come along and say, no, that would be considered nolad. Like we learned in the previous Mishnah, that if you have a keli that breaks, and now the broken pieces take on a new usage to them, so then already it's mukseh because of nolad. So actually, the braita by ovens is the same machloket that we learned in our Mishnah. So the Gemara says, Ve'azdar b'yuda l'tameh v'rabimi l'tameh. And each rabbi is going according to his opinions. Meaning now we know the author of our Mishnah, incidentally. The author of our Mishnah, which is a Stam Mishnah, which was anonymous on the last daf, that just said it needs a functionality. Now we know that opinion is Abimeir. And the opinion that says it has to be the same function is Rabbi Yehuda. Comes the Gemara and says, Matkif la Rava. Rava questions this understanding. This is the way Abaye understood the Braita. So now Rava questions, if that's so, Ademipalge b'shivre tanur, wouldn't they have to argue in the broken pieces of a tanur? Liflegu b'shivre kelim ba'alma. Right? Just keep the same case. Talk about regular kelim that broke. Which is why they have to go to a far-fetched case of an oven that broke and you have pieces. Do they serve the same function or not? It's the regular machloket of shivre kelim. Now why jump to a case of shivre tanur? It's not only by Shavre Tanur, it's by every Shavre Kiri. So even Rava rejects the way Abaye understands this Braita. So comes the Gemara and says, Ela Amar Rava. Rava comes along and says, I'm going to tell you the Hiddush of this Braita. B'Shavre Dehai Tanur Kamepalge. We're not just arguing on any oven. We're talking about B'Shavre Hai Tanur. This oven, a specific case of an oven, ditnan, as we learned in the Mishnah. Now, the Gemara is going to explain what type of oven this is. Now, let's just review just some understanding how the ovens were in the olden days, the tanur. Basically what it was a like a cylinder, and they would place it on the ground, the cylinder, and they would attach it to the ground. They would actually even surround it with tar in order to insulate it. Now it was attached to the ground. The base of the oven was actually the ground itself because it was a hollow cylinder. And they would make the fire inside. That was one of the ways they would make the olden day tanur. Now we're going to discuss a little different version of that tanur, taking the same cylinder, but imagine you have a hole in the ground, a bore, an empty pit, and they're taking that cylinder and they're placing it in the bore itself. So the bore actually serves as an extension to the walls of the tanur. Right? You have on top the cylinder that's placed into the hole, and now you have it extended to the walls of the bore. Right? And they would put the fire on the bottom, and the fire would rise up to the tanur itself. So that's the case, or one of the cases that we're going to be discussing now. Not a regular tanur that was fastened to the ground, but a tanur that was actually placed in a bor. And the Gemara is going to tell us some variations of what the din is going to be. And the Mishnah says, Natnu al pi habor. You place the tanur, let's say, on top of the bor, or al pi hadut.
Dut is similar to a bor, it's just above ground. Which means, so you have an above ground, let's say, hole, or you have a keli, let's say, above ground, that has a hole to it, they call that a dut. In the ground, if you have a hole, it's called a bor. Either way, you fasten the bor, you fasten the tanur into this bor, right? Vinatan sham even. And you place the rock there. What is the rock doing? It seems that it wasn't a perfect fit. So therefore you needed to wedge a rock in the bor, so the rock is between the wall of the bor and the wall of the tanur, in order that it's wedged in, so therefore it will not fall through, so it's able to stay. Okay, that's the mitziyut of the case. Let's read the Rashi together before we even go further to get to halachot. We're going to start Rashi, natno al pi habor. Tanurim shelahem, their ovens, asuim kekederot gedolot. They were made like big pots. Ve'en lahem shulayim, and they did not have a base. I mean, they were hollow. U'moshibin la'aris. Normally they would place them and affix them to the ground. U'madbik tit sibibotav, and they would insulate or surround the outside with tit, with tar. La'asoto av, in order to make the walls of the tanur thick, shi'azik humo, in order that it retains its heat. Di'ikiruya tefila. That would be called, by putting that tar around the oven, they would call that process tefila. Vi'imaga'at la'aris. And the tar would reach the ground. U'mitokach, haval shelo kayam. You know, once it's firmly placed on the ground, there's really no airspace anywhere. So when you light the fire within the tanur, it's going to really contain itself inside. The imnat no al piya bor or al piya dut shehi ke'en bor. However, if you didn't do the conventional way of placing it on the ground, either you place it over a bor or a dut. So now that she tells us what's the difference between a bor and a dut, he says ela shabor b'hafira. Bor is in the ground itself dug. Ve'adud bibinyan. The dut is an above ground, let's say, a structure that has a cavity. Ve'natan sham even beno leben dofen abor ledohako shelo yipol. Right, so you wedge the rock in between the wall of the oven and the wall of the bor in order that the tanur does not fall. Ve'yeh aumed be'avir. Right, in order that it's suspended now in the air. That's the case now. Now once we have the case, now let's understand the halachot. Back to the Gemara. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, Imasik melemata. If you light this type of tanur from the bottom, meaning from the floor of the bor, vehu nisok melemala, and the fire goes up to the top of the tanur, meaning it's a functioning tanur. Geez, there's no airspace, meaning the fire that you lit on the bottom is going to rise up to the top of the tanur, and it's going to work. Tameh. Then the tanur has a status of a tanur, and it has susceptibility to tumah, because the Torah tells us clearly that a tanur can receive tumah. But it has to be a tanur. So the Biuda says, what makes it a tanur? It's got to work. Now, it has got to work, but if you light it on the bottom of the bor, and the fire goes up, and it maintains itself in the tanur itself, tameh, ve'im lav, tahor. And if not, it's not considered a tanur, and therefore it's not considered a keli, and therefore it's not going to be susceptible to tum'ah, therefore it always remains tahor. Ve'achamim umrim. Hakamim argue, Ho'il v'husak mikol makom tameh. They say it doesn't matter. Would you? They say the tanur in such a case will always be, once you can light a fire on the bottom, it'll be tameh regardless. We will see exactly what this means. Let's read the Rashi now together inside. The Biyuda Omer. Im dofnotav lemala. If let's say the walls of this tanur, Kirubim ledufne habor, if they're so flush, let's say, to the walls of the bor, shelo tzrach latet bintayim ila even daka, where all you have to do is place a little rock to wedge it in between. Ve'en avir nikar ben dofne atarul dofne abor, and there's really not that much airspace between the walls of the bor and the tanur. Shi'akev et esek tanur, that in order that the fire or the heat is going to escape, because if there's airspace, so now already there's room for the fire or the heat to escape. But on the contrary, since this is a perfect fit, meaning the rock now makes it a nice fit, and the bottom of the bor is the base now of this tanur, to the extent that if you light the bottom of this bor, she'osina or aur bebor, you make the fire in the bor, that tanur nisok, and then the tanur will be flamed or hot. That she says milimala, as we have a gohot abah, he changes it, that tanur nisok betocho milimala, that's fine, meor derech shulav, fine, which is good, or shat tanur betoch halala bor ba'avir. Or let's say a different case. Either you have the rock case, or you can have another case where actually the tanur itself is in the bor itself. Let's say you have the bottom of the tanur is narrow. You actually have a picture in your art scrolls, if you want to see that. You see the picture over here where it's actually in the bor itself, where you don't need a rock. You see the bottom of the tanur is a little narrower, so it fits into the bor perfectly. It's flush. You don't need a rock wedged in like on the first picture on top. You just have a perfect tanur that's a little narrow on the bottom, and you place it in the bor itself. Okay? You see the picture next to it? It has the rock that is holding it in. Either way, Rabbi Yehuda says that's considered a legitimate tanur, and therefore it is going to receive tum'ah. Okay? Now, Rashi says, Ve'im lav, Ela niso kishar tanurim mitochan tahor, which means, but let's say by the tanur is not a perfect fit, and therefore you're not going to be able to light it on the bottom because it's going to escape, and therefore it's not going to have really heat on top. So the only way you're going to be able to use this tanur is you're going to have to put a makeshift floor on the tanur itself, right? Because it's really hollow. You're not going to rely on the bottom of the bor because it's not going to work because it's not fitting perfectly. Therefore you put a makeshift base on this tanur, and you'll put the coals in there to heat it up. Such a tanur, according to the Yehuda, is not susceptible to tum'ah. We will see why. But now we got the mitziut. Let's read Rashi together. Ve'im lav, ela nisok kishar tanurim mitochan. Right? If it's not a perfect fit, and if we have to make this makeshift base and light the fire within the tanur, ta'or, kedemifaresh ta'ama. Like the Gemara is going to explain. Now let's read the Gemara's interpretation to why this is so. Gemara says, and we are the third or the fourth wide line. Ubemai kamipalge, what is the mahloket between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yehuda and Hakamim in this Mishnah? So Hakamim, so it says behaikera, their mahloket is actually how to learn a pasuk. The pasuk is in Vayikra Yud Aleph, pasuk lamed he. Tanur vekirayim yutatz. It says if a tanur became tameh, since it's made out of earthenware, the only way to metaher, something that is earthenware, is to break it. So the Torah says, tanur vekirayim yutatz, teme'im hem, they are susceptible to tum'ah, V'tibi'im yiyu lachem, and they will be tameh for you. Now obviously there's a redundancy here in the pasuk, but now let's see the derasha. Rabbi Yehuda savar, Rabbi Yehuda says, mechusar netitza tameh. Obviously, for an oven to become tahor, it has to become broken. Right? Because it says the only way you can metahir the oven is yutatz. Yutatz means what? Break it. That means it was not broken before. It needed to be an oven, and now breaking it makes it tahor. However, she'en mechutzar netitza tahor. However, if it's broken from the beginning, so it's never considered a legitimate oven. Only an oven that's breakable. Right? That can become tameh, and the breaking it will make it tahor. But if it's broken from the beginning, it is not going to be considered an oven bichlal. Only an oven that's shayach to break. But if it's broken, it's not an oven from the inception. Now, what does this mean? So the way that she explains it, that she tells it to us like this, and I go back to that Rashi v'imlav, we can read it inside. He says, "Deba'inan mechutzar netitza shekarov yot mechubar." According to Rabbi Yehuda, an oven to be an oven has to be attached to the ground. When it's attached to the ground, either like the old conventional oven that was attached to the ground, or in the case where you affixed it to the board with the rock, or it fit in perfectly, so that's considered mechubar. That's attached. Something that's affixed like that, since it's attached, now it's possible what? To break it. And since it's breakable, therefore it's called an oven, therefore it'll receive tum'ah, and the breaking it will make it tahor. However, in an oven that, let's say, does not have the rock, or it's not fitting perfectly, so it's not considered mechubar, that oven already is considered broken from the inception. And therefore, it's not considered a keli, it's not considered susceptible to tumah, and therefore, he says, it is tahor. V'rabanan savre, teme'im yiyu lachem mikol makom. The rabbis say no. Any tanur has the ability to be susceptible to tumah from the fact that the pasuk says, teme'im yiyu lachem. The fact that the Torah repeats to me, Im Yulachem comes and tells you, any tanur, whether it's wedged in tightly or not, it's going to receive tumah. Oh, the Rabbanan Nameh HaKetiv Yutatz. But what do the rabbis do with the word Yutatz? Which sounds like the oven has to be breakable, not broken already. But it says, Ha'uli Idach Gisa. No, that's coming to tell you the other side. What's the other side? Desal kadatachamina. I would have thought kevan dechavre be'arha. Since the tanur is attached to the ground, kigufa de'arha dameh. It's considered part of the ground, and therefore something that's attached to the ground, for example, like a house, does not mekabel tumah at all. Kama shmalan, that what the chidush is, that even an oven that's attached to the ground is tameh. It's the reverse thinking. Because you would have thought something that's attached to the ground, we know a rule, mechuban lekarka is not mekabel tumah. I gave you the example of a house. So therefore, for sure, if it's not attached to the ground, that for sure is like a regular candy. For sure it's susceptible to tumah. The hadush of the pasuk is yutatz. Even if it's attached to the ground, we have to break it. Still it's mekabel tumah. That's already the chidush. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says no. Rabbi Yehuda says no. Yutatz, that's the only oven that is mekabel tumah, because for an oven to mekabel tumah, it has to be an oven that is breakable. And only one that is attached is breakable. So the Gemara says, V'idach nameh ha-ketiv teme'im yiyu lachem. Yeah, but doesn't the pasuk say, meaning according to the Yehuda, the pasuk does say timi'im yiyu lachem, which is mashma, any type of oven will be tameh. From the fact that the pasuk is redundant, the pasuk writes tanur v'kiraim yutatz timi'im yiyu lachem. That's mashma, any oven, even if it's not attached. I mean, how you learn that? Hai kedar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Tamar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Mahloket behesek rishon. Aval behesek sheni. Afilu talui besavar gamal.
One more condition. This whole subject, the mahloket between the Biyuda and the Hachamim by a tanur, which type of tanur is susceptible and which is not, the only discussion here is when you made it an oven. When does an oven become an oven? Behesek rishon. Hesek rishon means the first time you heated it up. The first time you heated it up, that's when the walls of the oven become hardened, and that's when it becomes an oven. So the whole discussion that we discuss now, if it's attached, if it's not attached, tameh or not, that's only discussing at the inception hesek rishon, meaning you put the oven, let's say, in the ground, and now you're making it an oven from the first fire, right? You're firing it up for the first time. There you have a mahloket. The first time you're firing it up, Rabbi Yehuda will say, what? No. To receive Tum'ah, it has to be attached. It follows the law of Yutatz. It has to be breakable. And breakable is only something that is attached. But once, let's say, you made the oven already, meaning you fired it up once. Once you fire it up once, and it was attached to the ground, and it's a legitimate oven, now, even if you detached it from the ground, and now let's say even if you hung it from the neck of a camel, and you fired it up the second time, it'll be susceptible to Tumah. She's the only mahloket is in Hesek Rishon. But once after Hesek Rishon, then already, no matter where the oven is, attached or not attached, it has the status of a tanur, and therefore it's susceptible to tumah. And that's what the pasuk is telling you. Teme'im yeyulachem, Rabbi Yehuda. Teme'im yeyulachem, meaning there is a case of oven where it'll be tameh always. What? Hesek sheni and on. Now, Amar Ula vehesek nishon rabbanan afidu talui besavar gamal. But according to the hachamim, they don't make a difference between the first firing it up or the second. They hold always it's considered a tanur, even if it was suspended in the air from the beginning. So that's the way we have the mahalakot. So let's just review now that we read it inside and we got some of the facts. We could just review the mahloket between Rabbi Yehuda and Hakamim. We have a tanur. The tanur is fastened into the ground properly. So there Rabbi Yehuda says, that's a tanur. That's a tanur because since it's fastened in the ground properly, it's possible to break it. And the Torah says, how do you metaher a tameh tanur? You touch, you break it. So your little tanur has to be what? Breakable. That's Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. However, let's say you have a tanur that's not fastened in the ground good, he considers that broken already. And therefore, in its inception, it never had a status of a tanur to start off with. And therefore, it's never susceptible to tumah. Now, one more condition. That's talking about when, at the first time, you're using the oven. To make an oven, it has to be attached in the ground, and you lit it up the first time. If you did it like that, now it's considered a legitimate tanur. Anything after that, I don't care how you fired up the oven. Even if it was hanging from the camel's neck and suspended in the air, it's a tanur already. Meaning, it'd be susceptible to tumah, even if it's not attached to the ground. That's shitat Rabbi Yehuda. And that's what the word timi'im yulachem means. Meaning, once you're after hesek rishon, it's always susceptible to tumah. Hakamim say no. They learn the opposite. They say, for an oven to become tameh, it doesn't matter if it's attached or not. Tameim yulachem. It's tameh, meaning it has a status of a tanur always. Hesek rishon, hesek sheni, always. So what does the pasuk yutatz come and teach me? Yutatz comes to teach me, haidush, that even if it's attached to the ground, it receives tumah. Because you might have thought if something is attached to the ground, it's mechubad lekarka. And since it's mechubad lekarka,
doesn't have the ability to become tamis. So Yutatz comes and says, no, even if it's an oven that needs to be broken, still it is susceptible to tumah. In any event, now we see the mahloket over here is a mahloket in such an oven. Now how does this relate back to Shabbat? So now we go back to the mahloket of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir. We had a statement. The statement said, Shivre Tanur, the broken pieces of a tanur. So one rabbi said the broken pieces can be used. The broken pieces are considered Shivre Tanur. They are not mukseh. Whereas one opinion said, no, the broken pieces of the tanur are mukseh. So now we said, what are we talking about? So Abaye came along and said, it's the same machloket about Mishnah. You know, do they serve the same purpose or not? If they serve the same purpose, so everybody will say it's not mukseh. If they don't serve the same purpose, you have a machloket. Comes Avad and says, no, that's we know that already. The hadush over here is that we're talking about such an oven. And what's the hadush by Shabbat? Rashi now. Look at the Rashi. Rashi comes along and says, we will read the Rashi Dibura Matril. Oh, actually, we have to speak it outside. Now, she doesn't say it inside. We'll speak it outside. Once already, we have a machloket between Rabbi Yudan Hakamim. What's considered a tanur? Meaning, according to Rabbi Yehuda, this tanur that's not fastened in the ground is not considered a tanur. Therefore, it's not considered a keli. Therefore, if it breaks, so if it's not a keli, it's going to be considered mukseh, because it's not a keli to start off with. However, according to Hakamim, since the tanur, even though it's not fastened, the ground is considered a tanur, if it's considered a keli, so the broken pieces of it will also have a status of a keli, therefore it will be non-mukseh. So now you're telling me hadush, meaning you're involving me in a whole subject of a tanur that wasn't attached to the ground, and the shards broke, so now you have a status. If you hold it was a tanur from the beginning, it's a keli. Therefore, the broken pieces of the keli will have a din of non-mukseh. If you hold it wasn't a tanur, meaning it's not a keli from the inception, therefore it's going to be mukseh. That's the way Rava wants to understand the Braita. So comes the Gemara and says, Matkif la Rav Asher, Ihacheh, if that's the way you're learning, Abayeh, why did they have to argue on if the oven breaks? Let them argue on the oven itself. Meaning, if the oven's a keli, it's not mukseh. If the oven is not a keli, so then it'll be mukseh. Why did you have to say if it broke? You could argue on the oven itself. Hashta tanur gufa. According to Rabbi Yehuda, the tanur itself is not considered a keli. Shevarav mibaya? Do you have to tell me about its broken pieces? That's superfluous. So therefore, this answer is also questioned. So now the Gemara says, we have a third way of understanding this statement. Ela amar av asher. Le'olam kede'amrinan mi'ikara. Really, we're going according to the original premise that we said, according to Abaye. That what? It's the machloket of where you had a regular oven. It broke. Now the pieces are functional. And now we're going to say that the machloket is it mukseh or not? Now, we said, what do you mean? That's obvious. We know that machloket already. So he says, no, there's a hadush in this case. We're talking about where the broken pieces of the tanur are still usable for baking. But not regular baking. A regular oven, you bake, you put the bread, let's say, in the oven, it bakes. These little pieces now are like tiles. That's called ma'aseh tafka. Maaseh Tafkaz, you take a tile and you place the bread or the dough on top of the tile and you put a fire underneath. So now the debate is going to be like this. Is that considered the same function? Well, if you look at it, you say, well, why not? The oven bakes. Now that it broke, it bakes. Now, according to Rabbi Meir, it doesn't matter. You don't need the original function, right? Even if it didn't serve as a baking this bread, it doesn't matter. But the Kiddush of the Braita is like this, and we read, V'Rabbi Meir Barab Rabbi Yehuda Ka'amar. And Rabbi Meir was actually questioning the Biyuda, and the conversation goes like this. Lididi, Rabbi Meir was saying, according to me, afilu be'osin me'in melacha. For me, I don't need to have the same melacha on these broken pieces. To me, it's not mukse, even if it can cover something. So, I have no problem. However, ela lididach, but according to you, Rabbi Yehuda, odili miha, at least admit to me, in this case of the broken piece of the oven, dechiay gavna melachtohu. Admit to me that at least it's the same melacha. Because after all, just like you bake in the oven, you can bake on these little tiles. Rabbi Yehuda lo dame. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, it's not the same melacha. Why? Hata meseko mebifnim. Hacha heseko mebahutz. Difference number one. In the tanur, the fire is inside. In this now broken piece, the fire is underneath and on the outside. That's a different way of baking. Difference number two, hatam me'omid. Hacha lav me'omid. When you have the tanur, you put the dough on the side of the oven, it's standing up, it's standing vertically. However, when you put the dough on this tile that broke, it's lying flat. And therefore, the way you bake is different in two ways. Number one, the fire is on the outside. And number two, the dough lies flat instead of standing vertically in the oven. That already is different, which is now we learn to be, that's very strict. When he said you need be'en melacha, melachtat, it's got to be precisely the melacha. So let's go back. Now we understand what the Hadush and the Tanur Braita was. Which means, the Hadush and the Tanur Braita was what? Yeah, the Tanur, regular Tanur. And it broke. According to the Nimir, it's not a question. Bottom line, as long as these broken pieces can be used for anything, non-mukseh. You just need me'en melacha. However, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the question came, since these items can be used for baking, so Rabbi Meir told him, Rabbi Yehuda, at least agree to me that this is considered non-mukseh, because Bama is still not only for baking. Rabbi Yehuda came back and says, no. I have a very strict interpretation. This is, yes, it's baking, but it's a different type of baking. Number one, the fire is on the outside here, as opposed to being inside like in the tanur. And number two, here the dough is lying flat, as in the oven, as opposed to the oven where it's standing vertically. So therefore, it's different. It's not considered me'en melacha. So now, comes out, we have a mahloket, Abaye and Rava, how to learn the braita of the tanur. Abaye, as now explained by Rav Asher, learned like we just said. Rava was the one that came along and said, it's talking about the tum'ah of an oven. And since it's not an oven, the inyan tum'ah, according to the Biyuda, because it's not attached, so it's not a keli for tum'ah, it won't be a keli for Shabbat. And therefore, if it, something breaks from it, it's not considered a keli, and therefore it's considered mukseh. As opposed to hachamim, they'll say, no, even if it's not attached to the ground, tanur is a tanur, and therefore it's a keli, and therefore the broken parts will be a keli as well. And that, the Gemara asked on that, so what did you have to argue by the pieces? You could have argued by the tanur itself. But that's the two ways of learning the braita. Comes the Gemara and continues. העיד רבי יוסף משום רבי אליעזר בן יעקב על שברי תנור ישן שניתנים בשבת ועל כיסויו שאינו צריך בית יד. Right? We said that the cover of the tanur is non-mukse even if it does not have a handle. אמר רבינה כמן מטלטלין על העידנה כיסויה דתנורי דמתם מחסיה דאין להם בית אחיזה Who are we relying on? That today we move the covers of tanurim, even though they don't have handles, and we're lenient in the city of Matam Mahsaya. Who are we relying on? Keman. Can it be Reza ben Yaakov? We must be relying on this opinion of the Braita Rabbi Reza ben Yaakov that said that even though they do not have handles, they are not musekos, they have a function. Comes the Mishnah and says, Ha'even Shibikiruya. We are discussing now a pumpkin that was hollowed out. In the old days they would use hollowed out pumpkins as vessels in order to draw water in them from the well. Only problem is, to get the pumpkin down into the well, you need a weight. So how would they weight it down? They place a rock in the pumpkin to serve as a weight in order to get it down into the bore. So now the discussion in the Mishnah is going to be, does that pumpkin become mukseh because of the rock that's in it? The rock obviously is mukseh. A rock is mukseh on Shabbat. It's not a keli. So now the question is, you stuck it in the pumpkin, is it mukseh or not? So the Mishnah says, Ha'even shebekiruya, the rock that's in the pumpkin, im mali'in ba, if you use this pumpkin in order to fill it up with water, ve'ena nofelet, and the rock doesn't come out, meaning you fasten the rock into the pumpkin that it doesn't fall out, meaning when you stick the pumpkin, it's not going to float up and come out, ma'le'in ba, then you could use it on Shabbat, and it is non-mukseh. However, ve'im lav, if it's not fastened in, en ma'le'in ba. So the logic is going to be over here, that if it's just sitting in the pumpkin, so now the pumpkin is holding something that's mukseh, so the pumpkin becomes a base, or basis, for mukseh. However, when it's attached, venerates part of it, exactly. It becomes an extension of the pumpkin, and therefore, no problem. So it depends if it's in there tightly or not. That's the first deen. Second deen of the Mishnah, zimora. Zimora would be a grapevine. Shehi keshura betafiyah. You have, let's say, a grapevine that they attach to it a pach. What's a pach? A jug. Right? They tied the jug to the grapevine. Mimale'im ba b'shabbat. It is permissible to take that grapevine now and lower it down into the bor and use it as a to draw the water, even though a grapevine normally would be mukseh, but now that you attach the pach to it, so it's considered one utensil, and it is non-mukseh. The Gemara will explain what the chidush is, right? So you made the zimora, you made the grapevine non-mukseh. Last case of the Mishnah, pekaka halon, the hole that is in the window. Let's review how they used to make their windows in the olden days. They would have, let's say, an actual hole in the structure, in the wall. Now, how would they seal it up? They would have a board. They would take a regular board that was made to cut out to the exact size, and they would just plug up the hole. When they wanted to open the window, they would take the board out, and that would be open. So the discussion is, are you allowed to plug up these open windows on Shabbat? What's the question? It could be it's boneh. Could be your building. No, you're taking this piece of wood and you're fixing it into the wall or not. So the Gemara Mishnah says, Pekaka halon. This plug that they put in the window, Rabbi Eliezer omer bizman shu kashur vetalui pokekim bo. Ve'imnat em pokekim bo. Rabbi Eliezer says you need two conditions to make it mutar. Number one, it has to be attached with a string, meaning it cannot be resting just on the floor alone. It has to have a string that's attached to the board, right? And it also has to be dangling in the air. So it's dangling in the air. So you take it out, it's just dangling. Then you can just stick it back in. However, if you don't have those conditions, meaning, if even though it's attached to a string, but if let's say it's sitting on the floor, meaning it's a long rope, and the board is sitting on the floor, it'd be an Aizaz Mahmir. Because so long as it's dangling in the air, it doesn't look like you're building anything. It's there already. You just the Tazma. When you pick it up from the floor, it looks like more that you're involved in a construction. So that's the Shitab to be the end of the Gemara. Will elaborate later. V'achamim omrim, ben kach hu ben kach, pokekim bo. They say it doesn't matter. In any event, you can use it. The Gemara is going to explain what does it mean, ben kach hu ben kach. What does it mean, in any event, you're allowed to plug up the wall. Now the Gemara starts. Tana Natan, we learned over there in the Mishnah. Even shall be a habit. You have a rock that is on top of a barrel. Now a rock obviously is mukseh. The barrel, let's say, is a barrel of wine. Mate al sida vehi nofelet. You're able to tilt the barrel a little in order that the rock will fall off, and now you can access the wine. Okay? Amar Rava, Amar Rav Ame, Amar Rav Yohanan, Lo shanu ela b'shocheyach. That gives you a condition. When do we allow you to do this? Well, actually, that she gives a little introduction. If all you need to tilt it, it'll be okay in all cases. But let's say tilting is not an option, because let's say this barrel with the rock on it is amongst other barrels. Now by tilting it, you can't tilt it. And even if you do tilt it, the rock is going to fall on another barrel and break it. So the only option really is you have to lift it up. You have to lift the barrel up and then tilt it off. So the Gemara says, when are you allowed to lift the barrel up and then, you know, to take the rock off? So the Gemara says, Lo shanu ela b'shocheyach. That's only talking where you forgot the rock on the barrel before Shabbat. Aval b'maniyah. But let's say before Shabbat you went specifically and you placed it on top of the barrel. Na'asa basis tedvar ha'asur. Then if the barrel becomes a base for holding the rock, and you're not allowed to move the barrel at all. So now we have a very important hadush. To make a basis, according to Rabba at least, it has to be placed there intentionally. But if let's say you placed it and you forgot it there, it doesn't become a base to it, and therefore it will be permissible. Look at Rashi. Rashi divura matchil lo shanu. Rashi says lo shanu demutar letaltel lachabit. When did we say it's permissible to lift up the chabit va'even aleha, and the rock is going to be on diktani v'maitab in chabiyot? If let's say this barrel was amongst other barrels, shiare la tota, you're scared to tilt it. Sham shelo tipol ha'even al ha'habit shebetzidah, because you don't want the rock to fall on the barrel that's next to it. Magbiha, so you're able to lift the entire barrel itself. Umateh al tzidah, and you can tilt it. Vehi nofel it. When is that said? Beshocheyah. That's only when you forgot the rock on the barrel, as she says. Shelo b'mitkaven ava b'maniyah. But if you placed it there specifically, Na'asi tahabit basis la'even shi davar ha'asu v'hem etatil tahabit. So that's very important deen. You can lift the barrel with the rock on it, so long as the rock was forgotten there. However, if you place the rock there, it is going to be forbidden to lift it up, because the habit becomes a base for holding the rock. That's one way of learning. Rav Yosef has the reverse way of understanding. The Rav Yosef, Amar of Asem, Amar of Yohanan, he says, Lo shanu ela b'shocheyah. He says, on the contrary, when is it asur? Only in a case of shocheyah. Aval b'maniyah. But if you placed it there on purpose before Shabbat, Na'asa kisui le'achabit. Then the rock has the status of a cover of the habit, and it is non-mukseh. So then we have two ways of looking at it. Is shocheyah good or not? The first rabbi says shocheyah is good. It does not make it a basis. When the second rabbi says, no, on the contrary, shocheyah, it's a problem, it becomes a basis. Maniyah, you placed it there, then already is okay, because now it becomes like a cover. So there's a look in between the rabbis over here. Amar Rabba. Rabba comes along and says, Mutbinan Ashimatin.
there's a question according to my opinion. I just told you that what? If you forgot the rock, it's okay. It doesn't make a basis. But if you placed it there, it does become a basis. So Rabba is saying, listen, there's a problem with what I just said. He's admitting there's a problem with what I just said from the Mishnah that we just learned. And he says, Mutbinan Ashimati. There's a question on my statement. Ha'ebin Shibikiduya. Yeah, the rock that was in the pumpkin. Im mimmale'in ba ve'ena nofelet mimmale'in ba. We said what? If you can draw the water with the pumpkin and the rock doesn't fall out, so then already we said it's mutar. You can use it. Now what does that mean? That means before Shabbat you took the rock and you placed it in the pumpkin. And we still were saying what? It doesn't make it a basis. What do you mean? According to Rava, when you place it in, that's when it makes it a basis. So that contradicts our Mishnah. So the Gemara says, Veloi. He says, no, it's not a question. Hatam, kevan dehadka. Since in the case of the rock and the pumpkin, where you tied it to the wall of the pumpkin, shaviat dofen. That's considered the wall of the pumpkin. It's an extension of the pumpkin. And therefore, it's not as if you have a rock in the pumpkin. No, it all becomes pumpkin. It all becomes part of the item. Mashiach, when you take a rock and you place it, let's say, on top, it's not becomes part, doesn't become part of the habit. On the contrary, now the habit becomes a base for holding the rock. So there's a difference between placing a rock on a habit, where the habit becomes the base to hold the rock, or is when you attach a rock to the pumpkin, where now it becomes part of the pumpkin itself. Comes the Gemara and says, Amar of Yosef, the other opinion, Umudvina Nashmatin. They asked the question on my opinion that says what? That shocheyach is a problem. That if you forgot it there, it's a problem. Only when you actually placed it there with kavanah, then already is it considered non-muse. So they asked the question on his opinion from our Mishnah. Im lav, en mimale'in ba. So what do we say? We said if, let's say, the rock that's in the pumpkin, if it's not fastened well, so then already it's mukseh. So the understanding is, meaning what? You forgot the rock in there from before Shabbat. And what are we saying? It's mukseh. What do you mean? According to the opinion of Rabbi Yosef, when Rabbi Yosef came along and said, and I quoted it inside, let's go back. Right, Rabbi Yosef's statement was, Rabbi Yosef Amar, I'm reading it inside the Gemara, Lo shanu ela b'shocheyach. That on the contrary, when it's shocheyach, that's when it becomes mukseh. Aval b'maniach, but when you placed it there on purpose, then already it becomes permissible. So in this case over here, in the case of the Mishnah, if you put the rock there before Shabbat, so therefore it's maniyah. So therefore it should not be mukseh. Why did the Mishnah say that, you know, if you can't use it, if the rock moves around, it's mukseh? What's the difference? If I placed it there before Shabbat, it's maniyah. And we know the Dina Kodlev says maniyah makes it non-mukseh. So how do you explain our Mishnah? It says, Veloi, it's not a question. Hatam kevan delo hadka. Over there you didn't fasten it. Batule batla. So therefore, it's negated. Which means, since you can't use it in such a way, because the rock is moving around, so even though you placed it, but that rock over there is an impediment. And therefore, even though you're simple, even though you placed it, it'll be mukseh. Rashi says, Veloi, lakashali. It's if you didn't tie it, you can't use the pumpkin to fill up the water. Because it's going to fall out the rock. So now already you negated it. It's not a functional keli for you anymore.
which means, but when you take a rock and you place it on the habit, on the contrary, you could use it as a cover. So therefore there's a difference of being maniyah on a habit or being maniyah in the pumpkin. If you maniyah a rock on the habit, beautiful. Now the rock can serve as a cover, and therefore we say it's non-mufseh. You can lift the entire habit. Masha'enkin, if you took this rock and you just stuck it into the pumpkin before Shabbat, maniyah, but you didn't tie it. So therefore, obviously, this whole pumpkin now is not usable. And therefore, it's not going to have a status of a keli. And therefore, it'll be mukseh. So therefore, each rabbi will interpret according to his opinion. Now, they might come and plague it. What is the source of the mahloket? Mor sabar ba'inan ma'aseh, umor sabar lo ba'inan ma'aseh. The mahloket is, do you need an action or not? What is this subject over here? The Gemara is going to explain. The rabbis are going according to their reasonings. When Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, Amar Rav Hanina, he said in the name of Rav Hanina, Ve'amli la Amar Rabbi Zera, Amar Rav Hanina, Pamachat alach Rabbi the Makom Echad. One time Rabbi went to a place. Umatza nidbach shel abanim. He found a place where there was a row of rocks, a wall of rocks, abanim, stones. Ve'amar l'tamidat. So he told the students before Shabbat, Tse'u ve'hashvu. Go and have concentration or intention that we're going to use these rocks on Shabbat, kedesh shineshev alehen lemachar, in order that we can use them for sitting on them tomorrow on Shabbat. Velo etzlichan Rabbi lemaaseh, and Rabbi did not make them do any action to the rocks. The fact that they just designated it mentally, that already was enough. In order to take a rock that normally is mukseh, the thought of wanting to use it for Shabbat, that already can take the status of a mukseh item out of mukseh. That was the way Rav Dimi had the story. The Rav Yohanan Amar, Rav Yohanan said, no, that wasn't the story. Hitzlichan Rabbi lemaaseh. Actually, Rabbi made them do a maaseh. It wasn't enough for them just to have kavana. So the Gemara says, "My amar lihu." What did he? My amar lihu Rabbi, which means my amar lihu. What did Rabbi tell him to do? Because according to you, you're telling me what Rabbi told them that they have to do a maaseh. What maaseh? What do you have to do to the rocks to make them non mukseh? So the Gemara says, "Rabbi ame amar." Rabbi Amir says, "Se'u v'lamdum." Go and lamdum actually means like pile them up, which means pile them. Actually, lamdum is take them and make them into rows. Which is, it seems they were piled up already. So go prepare them for before Shabbat. Take them and put them out, position them exactly in order so tomorrow we can come and we can sit on them. So he made them do an actual Ma'aseh before Shabbat in order to set the meaning like this. According to the way Rabbi Ami understands the story, Rabbi held these rocks are mukseh. Thinking to take them out of mukseh is definitely not enough. Now, if they're going to remain in their piles, you can't go on Shabbat now and take them out of their piles and sit on them. The only way you'll be able to solve this is from before Shabbat, set them up. Now, going to sit on them on Shabbat is not mukseh. Because sitting on a rock, you're not doing anything. You're not moving it. Mukseh is only a problem when you move the item. So therefore, according to this opinion, machshava is definitely not enough. The only way you can solve it is have it prepared before Shabbat so you can just come and sit on it. So that's what Abi told the students. Go to the rocks and prepare them. Amar dehu Rabbi Aseh. Rabbi Aseh says no. Amar tse'u the shifshifum. He told them that you don't have to make such a thing. We have to prepare them before Shabbat.
You just have to go and, let's say, clean them a little. Wipe them off. It seems something, let's say, has some tar on them or something like that. Go take a rag before Shabbat. Just wipe them off.
That's what
even if you didn't set them up, meaning on Shabbat now, they'd be able to come and actually lift the rocks according to Rav Aser, put them out. Because already they did a small ma'aseh. So we have a machloket over here between Rav Amir and Rav Aser. To what extent do you have to do before Shabbat to take a mukseh item and make it non-mukseh? Rav Amir says you need a ma'aseh gadol. You need a great ma'aseh to take it out. Rav Aser says no. Even a ma'aseh katan, like shifshuf, just cleaning the rocks, will do the job. And the Gemara says, so again, just to review this last point, when the Gemara said above, b'mayka mipalgeh, this is a new machloket, which means, what is the machloket between Rav Amir and Rav Aser? So the Gemara says, the machloket is going to be, do you need a big ma'aseh or not? Rav Amir will tell you, you need a big ma'aseh for these rocks. Therefore, Rav Yohanan, the case was, Rabbi told them, take the rocks down, straighten them out, so you can sit on them on Shabbat. Rav Amir said, no, just clean them, and it's enough. And Rav Yohanan actually held, it's enough to even make a machshava. So because they have a three-way machloket, is machshava, ma'aseh gadol, or even ma'aseh katan. That comes out the three-way Mahloket. Comes the Gemara and says, Amar lehu. Shishu Amar, fine. Itmar, Rabbi Yosef ben Shaul Amar. Rabbi Yosef ben Shaul said, Su'ar shel korot. You have, let's say, Hava. He says it was a different case. The story of Rabbi was not with rocks. It was with beams. It was a pile of beams. So'ara, she says, Seder shel korot hadashot. They were new beams, and they pile them up in order to use them for binyan. The Rabbi Yohanan ben Shaul Amar, Geshush shel sefina hava. He says, no, it wasn't rocks, and it wasn't beams. It was the poles that are used on the boat in order to measure the depth of the sea. As we learned previously in the Gemara, they used to have these poles that were used to measure the depth. So we have a three-way machloka now. What exactly was there? Was it the stones? Was it the beams? Or was it the poles? Now the Gemara says, Man de amar gishush. If the opinion that says was talking about these beams of the or these poles of the boat, called sheken soar. All the more so soar, meaning the assumption is people are usually more makpid, they're more particular on these poles of the boat, because they don't want them to warp. And therefore you don't usually use them for anything else but their function. So if the rabbi was said that the case is talking about the poles of the boat, and still, just by going and, let's say, making shifshuf, wiping them off a little, makes a designation, meaning if you could make a pole of a boat non-mukseh, through designation, all the more so you can do it by the beams. Uman damar soar, but the opinion that says it was beams, aval geshush kapid aleh. But he would say that a geshush, you can never make it non-mukseh, because bottom line, the person is makpid on this item. Let's read Rashi. Rashi says, kapid aleh, shelo yitakim. He doesn't want the pole of the boat that stick to warp. Umiyaqed le makom. And he designates it in a certain spot, umaksele biyadayim. And, you know, he puts it away with his hand, so to speak, and it's out of his mind to use it all. Vafil Rabbi Shimon asul l'taltev de mukse mahmat hasaron kis. Meaning even Rabbi Shimon that has a lenient view of mukse, he agrees that something that a person does not use out of fear of breaking it, that's called mukse mahmat hasaron kis, and therefore he does not use it at all. So therefore, let's just review what we said over here. Comes out, we had a mahloket, three-way, between Rabbi Yohanan, Rabbi Ami, and Rabbi Asi, in the story of Rabbi. Right? When you had the rock, the Avanim over there, and they wanted to sit on them on Shabbat. The first rabbi said, he told them, go out and just make a machshava. The second rabbi said, no. He told them, go out and actually set them up.
because they're mukseh. And if you don't send them before Shabbat, you're not going to be able to move them. The third rabbi, Rabbi Asir, says, no, ma'aseh katan's enough. Just go out and shine them up, just clean them a little, and already that's considered already enough designation for the to make them non-mukseh. Then we have a mahlok at exactly what were they. One rabbi says it was beams, and one rabbi says it was the sticks that they use on the boats. The one that says sticks on the boats, all of them also would agree by the beams. But the one that says beams would say only beams. But sticks on the boat, you might not use these things for anything else. They're out of your mind, and therefore one would not use them for anything, even for sitting on Shabbat. Comes again and continues. One more piece. Zimora. Zimora is a grapevine. She kishura. We said if it was you took a little flask and you tied it to the zimura before Shabbat, so the zimura, the grapevine, becomes non-mukseh, and you can draw with it on Shabbat.
Is it attached?
It's attached. It's tied. So the Gemara says kishura in only if it is tied. Lo kishura lo. Right, but if it wasn't tied before Shabbat, the pach, the little jug to the vine, of course it's going to be mukseh. Now, even though, meaning like this, even though, let's say you can put this jug on the vine without tying it. Let's say the edge of the vine has like a little hook, right? It's hooked. So therefore, technically you can take this pack and just click it on or hang it. From the Mishnah, it's mashma, that's not enough. It actually has to be tied. Even if you can get the pack on the vine to stay, even if it's not tied, that's going to be asur. Because the Mishnah says what? She kishura. So the Gemara makes it to you. Only if it is tied. But to place the pach on the grapevine in any other way, not good. The Gemara is going to analyze. Why is that so? Gemara says, Matnitin de lo ke Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel. Our Mishnah is not going like Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel. Netanya. We have a braita. Hariyot shel dekel. Let's say you have the pieces of wood of the palm tree, the palm branches, let's say, hariyot shel dekel, shegadran le'etzim. You collected them in order to use them for fuel. I mean, le'etzim. So therefore they are mukseh, because the purpose is you want to use them for wood, and that cannot be done on Shabbat. V'nimlach aleh nishiva. And then all of a sudden you change your mind and say, you know what? I want to use this for a mat in order to sit on them. Sarich likshor. So the first rabbi says, no, mashava is not enough here. You actually have to do a ma'aseh. Meaning you actually have to take these palm branches and tie them to each other. Now it'll take it out of its mukseh status. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel omer, en sarich likshor. He says, no, you don't have to tie them. It's enough what? To have mashava. So therefore, you see, Rabban Shimon Gamliel says you don't need so much ma'aseh. Therefore, he should say the same thing by the vine. You have the vine, but we know a vine is mukseh. Once you put a pach at the end of it, that already should take the status of the mukseh away, even if you didn't tie it. Because you see, Rabban Shimon Gamliel says to take the status of mukseh where you don't need to tie it. For example, the case of the hariyot shel dekel. It's enough just what? Taveh. Mashava. So that's the question, that our Mishnah is not going like Rabban Shimon Gamliel. So the Gemara says no. Amar Rav Sheshet Afilu Tema Rabban Shimon Gamliel. Rabban Shimon Gamliel will agree in our Mishnah you have to tie it to the grapevine. Why? Hachab imay askinan b'mechuberet be'aviha. We're talking about a specific case. The vine is still attached to the ground. Oh, now if the vine is still attached to the ground, so what's the issue? Rashi, be'aviha. So he says, be'gifin, meaning it's still attached to the vine itself. So therefore, what's the concern? He tells you the only way we're going to allow you to use this vine that's attached to the ground, which is really, it's mukseh, obviously, because it's attached to the ground. You have to take the pach and you have to do a ma'aseh. You have to actually tie it. Which is then already, it makes the vine batel to the pach. Because it's attached to the ground. Which is, if it wasn't attached to the ground, of course the man will say, it's like the case of the mat. All you do is have the machshava, just take the pack and stick it on, you don't have to tie it. But since this is attached to the ground, you need more of a ma'aseh, it's more mukseh. And therefore you need more of a ma'aseh in order to become, make it out of mukseh, so then you have to tie it. So the Gemara says, wait, it's attached to the ground, could you use something that's attached to the ground? The Gemara asks the next question, what are you talking about? You're using now something that's attached to the ground. We know on Shabbat that is forbidden. Obviously, what's the gezerah? You're worried that you might pull it out. So I don't care if it was tied before Shabbat. Doesn't matter. So you, technically, you want to get around the mukseh issue. You didn't get around it. If it's mechuban lekarka, it's still asur. So the Gemara says, we can answer that. Lemata mishlosha. We're talking where it is very close to the ground, this vine. It's within three tefahim of the ground. And the rule is that when are you not allowed to use something that's attached to the ground? When it's taller than three tefahim. However, if it's within three tefahim of the ground, it's like it's the ground itself. And now we have to say a case. It's a very small vine. Now obviously you were drawing in a very shallow ditch that was next to it. Because obviously if it's left the teeth of Arim, so you're attaching now a pach to it from before Shabbat. The reason why you have to attach it, because it is mukseri, because it's attached to the ground. So you need to do a ma'aseh to take it out. And obviously you have like a little ditch next to it that you're going to use to draw the water out. That's the way he learns the case. As she says next to that, he writes, Uchgon nishov min ha-mayan she'eno amok. It's talking about when you're drawing from a wellspring that is not deep. Now, that's one way of learning. Comes Rav Asher and says no. Rav Asher amar, afilu tema bitlusha. He comes and says no. We can even be talking about where the grapevine was detached. Oh, so if it was detached, so then what do you have to tie it for? According to the Rabban Shimon Gamliel, machshava alone is enough by the case of Hariot Shel Dekel. So therefore here it should be just enough just to take the jug, just click it on, you know, on the hook, and just draw. What do you have to make a maaseh when you're tying it before Shabbat? It's detached. He says, you know why you need to do that? He says like this, Gezerah Shem Yiktom. Gezerah, you might come on Shabbat and break the vine. Meaning, what's the issue over here? Let's read it inside. Shem Limahar, if you didn't tie the jug before Shabbat, what's going to happen? You're going to come on Shabbat now. Tielo Aruka. You're going to see the vine is too long for the function. The yiktemina. And what are you going to do? You'll come and break it. Mitok shiraka. Since it's soft, a vine is, you can break a vine very easily. Venuhaliktom. Venimsa ose keli. Now you made a keli, you made the vine usable. That would be considered, as she says, makeh bepatish. However, so therefore what? In order to get the guy not to come and break the vine on Shabbat, we tell him before Shabbat, take the pack, tie it on, it's done already. Finish. It's made already from before Shabbat. We don't want the guy coming on Shabbat now and taking the vine and taking this thing, this pack, and attach it, because maybe now they'll see the vine is a little long and he's going to start to adjust it and break it, and since it's soft, it's breakable, he'll come to be makim and patish. However, in the case of the Hariyot Shel Dekel, in that case over there you had wood, palm branches. Your intention originally was what for? Wood. Right? Then before Shabbat you decide what? I don't want to use it for wood anymore. I want to use it for sitting. It's enough just to say what? I want to sit on them. There we don't make a gezerah that on Shabbat you might come to break them because they're hard. Since they're hard, they're pisud. It's not so simple to go start adjusting them and breaking them. So therefore, your machshavah erev Shabbat will suffice. Masha'ekem by the grapevine, since they're soft, as she says, they have the ability to, they're flexible, and they have the ability to be broken. Gentlemen, if we have 4 minutes, I just want to review all the points that we said today very quickly. Point number one, the first case was the Megufat Habit, was the Habit that broke,
And we said the pieces can be used on Shabbat, they're not mukseh, since they still have a function to cover things, so long as you don't scrape off the points or the protrusions on these broken pieces, because that would be making it a keli, which would be makeva patish. The second case was when you have a mat and some of the pieces of the mat came off, this krumiyot shel mahaselet, they are also non-mukseh, because you can use it to cover the afar, either the afar on the ground so it doesn't rise, or covering the afar that's used to cover tzo'ah. Very good. You have the remnants of a talet. We said if it's less than 3x3 etzba'ot, it is mukseh because it is not even usable for aniyim. The next case was the shevret tanur. We had basically two opinions on shevret tanur. Either it was still not a regular case where the tanur broke, and now the pieces do not do the same melacha of the original tanur, but they do something very similar, meaning they still have the ability to use as baking. So the Bibi here holds, of course, it's non-mukseh, because you don't even need the same melacha. The Hiddush was that even according to the Biyuda, it is going to be mukseh. Why? It serves the same purpose, but it's a different type of baking. Because here the fire is on the bottom, and also the bread lies flat, as opposed to an oven where the fire is within, and it lies vertically on the wall. That's Abayir's way of learning the, and Abayir's way of learning the Beraita. According to Rava, he said, no, the case is talking about the Tum'ah of an oven. And the basic rule was, if the oven is an oven, it's a keli, and therefore, if it breaks, it's still considered part of a keli, if it's usable, and therefore it's non-mukseh. If you consider an oven not mikabel Tum'ah, like the Yehuda, because it's not attached to the ground, therefore it's not a keli, it's broken pieces, hence will be not a keli as well, and therefore it will be mukseh. Then we discussed the cover of a oven, and we said, even if it doesn't have a handle, it is non-mukseh, because it is usable. Then we discussed the rock that is in the pumpkin, and we made a difference. If it's attached well before Shabbat into the pumpkin, it becomes batel to the pumpkin, and therefore you could use it to draw the water. If not, then already it's not a keli, because it's not usable, and therefore the pumpkin becomes mukseh. We had a great mahloket over here. If you had, let's say, a even, you had a rock that was on top of a habit, right, on top of the barrel. So we said it's permissible to shake it off in order to get to the wine. But then we had a mahloket between Rava and Rav Yosef. In what case does the rock become a basis? According to Rava, it becomes a basis when you placed it there intentionally. Yeah. According to Rav Yosef, it becomes a basis only when you are shokheya. That's a very important machloket to remember between Rava and Rav Yosef. What makes the basis? Furthermore, we had a three-way machloket in a case where you had stones that were designated for a building, and now you want to use them on Shabbat to sit on them. So one opinion said it's enough to make a machshava, just to think. Actually, that was Rav Harina's opinion. Rav Amir says, no, you actually have to set them up from for Shabbat in order to sit on them. And Rav Aseh came along and said, no, it's enough just to wipe them down. The last case that we had was the Zimurah Shel Gefen, was the grapevine that had the pack attached to it. Everybody will agree, you need to tie it before Shabbat, even according to Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, for one of two reasons. Either because it was still attached to the ground, the vine, and we're talking it's attached within three tefachim of the ground, so you don't have a problem of using something that's mechubad, but the issue is it's really mukseh because it's attached to the ground, so by tying it before Shabbat, that already takes it out of its mukseh status. Or we could say it is detached. The reason why you have to tie it before Shabbat, because we worry that you might come to break it off because it's soft. But by Hariyot Shel Dekel, if you designated them before Shabbat for sitting purposes, Machshava, according to Rabban Shimon Gamliel, is enough. And we're not concerned that you might come to adjust them and break them because they are not as flexible.